Turkey's president will be at the White House on Wednesday. Will talking about war crimes in Syria be on the agenda?
There were further incidents that U.S. officials had seen in these live drone feeds that were raising more concerns sort of about the scope of potential war crimes and the abuses being carried out by these forces.
A Mormon community is leaving Mexico in the aftermath of a brutal massacre.
This attack has been devastating for the community. It's broken its heart. A lot of the people are very worried about their safety and the future of their kids, so many have left.
And Disney Plus launches with some minuses. This is What's News for Tuesday, November 12th. I'm Charlie Turner for The Wall Street Journal. We'll have those stories in a moment. First, here are some other stories we're following. The Supreme Court heard arguments today about the Trump administration's attempt to end DACA, Deferred Action for Child Arrivals. U.S. Solicitor General Noel Francisco told the court that the administration had the authority to end the program, which was put in place by President Obama to protect the children of immigrants who came to the U.S. illegally. Two lower court decisions found the government's rationale to cancel DACA invalid. It was based on a one-page letter from then-Attorney General Jeff Sessions asserting, without explanation, that the Obama-era program was unconstitutional and exceeded the president's statutory power. A decision in the case is likely to come at the end of the Supreme Court's term in June. The High Court also left in place a Connecticut ruling that allowed victims' families from the 2012 Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting to sue the maker of a popular assault rifle used in the massacre. The court, in a brief written Tuesday, said it wouldn't consider an appeal by Remington Arms that sought to have the lawsuit dismissed. The company argued that the civil claims for monetary damages were prohibited by a 2005 federal law in which Congress protected gun makers from legal liability. The families have argued that the assault rifle was marketed in a way that promoted violence. The Wall Street Journal's Brent Kendall says the court, as is customary, declined to explain why it decided not to hear the appeal. However,
I think we can extrapolate from the court's action today that they're not eager to get involved in this area or to flesh out, you know, what kinds of legal protections the gun industry will or won't have.
26 people were shot to death at the school, including 20 children. The American Civil Liberties Union and a group of McDonald's workers in Michigan are suing the fast food giant. The lawsuit claims the management at one of the company's franchises ignored allegations of sexual harassment. Attorneys say the suit currently extends to 8 women, but they expect more named complainants to come forward and are seeking class action status. In the past, the company has argued that it shouldn't be held responsible for misconduct at franchised locations. Last month, the federal appeals court agreed with them. A spokeswoman for McDonald's says the company has implemented anti-harassment policies at its corporate restaurants. At least 50 similar complaints have been filed against McDonald's in the last 3 years, including at company-owned stores. And finally, millions of people are expected to tune in tomorrow for the first public hearings in the impeachment investigation into President Trump. House Democrats will start with questioning of Bill Taylor and George Kent. Taylor is the acting ambassador to Ukraine. Kent is a senior State Department official. These hearings come 2 months after the House Intelligence Committee first revealed the existence of the now infamous whistleblower complaint, which detailed a July 25th phone call between Mr. Trump and the Ukrainian president. In the call, Mr. Trump pressed for investigations into his political rivals. So far, the congressional inquiry into the incident has unfolded behind closed doors. U.S. military officials watched live drone feeds last month that appeared to show Turkish-based Arab gunmen targeting civilians during their assault on Kurdish fighters in northeastern Syria. The Wall Street Journal says Americans reported the attacks to their commanders as possible war crimes. Joining us from Beirut, Lebanon, in this Wall Street Journal exclusive is the journal's Dion Nissenbaum. Dion, you talked to current and former U.S. officials who were familiar with the incidents. They were the ones that told you about these drones, which contain the surveillance footage?
That's right. What was interesting is there was a lot of concern that we found at different levels of the government about allegations that the Syrian Arab forces backed by Turkey were carrying out a variety of war crimes. And there were a number of rather public incidents, but there were further incidents that U.S. officials had seen in these live drone feeds that were raising more concerns sort of about the scope of the potential war crimes and the abuses being carried out by these forces.
And the officials that you talked to, they were the ones that saw the videos?
Well, we can't go too far into sourcing, but we certainly did speak with people that did see the videos at various points in the process. The videos were originally seen by people in the region who were following the live drone feeds during the Turkish-backed incursion into Syria, and they were following it because they were trying to protect U.S. forces that were operating in Syria and preparing to withdraw. And there were concerns that American forces and diplomats might be cut off by these Turkish-backed forces. So they were following what was happening with these Turkish-backed fighters and saw these incidents occur, and they reported them to their commanders, their superiors, as potential war crimes for further investigation.
Dion, is there some disagreement over whether this footage showed war crimes being committed? I mean, as this traveled further up the chain, do some people think that the video or the videos were inconclusive?
Yeah, there's an interesting sort of split here within primarily the military establishment, but also in the diplomatic field as well. The people on the ground sent two videos up through the military chain of command of two potential incidents where they said that these Turkish-backed Syrian fighters were alleged to have shot Kurdish civilians in Syria. And when commanders looked at that, with some distance, they believed that the footage was inconclusive, that you couldn't draw the conclusions that the people in the field had drawn. Now, there is more to this because there are State Department officials that pulled together a variety of other information, open source information, their own reporting, and they concluded that these attacks were credible allegations of war crimes. So the videos themselves may not be as conclusive as people would like, but the other people that we've talked to have said that if you put that together with the other reporting, that it does raise concerns and lead to their conclusion that these are credible allegations of war crimes.
Of course, this follows the U.S. decision to pull troops out of northern Syria, leaving the Kurds exposed to attacks from Turkey. Doesn't this footage increase concerns about more possible war crimes by Turkish fighters if the U.S. does not intervene?
Yeah, I think that's a point that a number of sources were trying to convey to us in this process, is that there have been a number of concerning incidents, some of them captured on cell phone videos and posted by these fighters themselves. They are still in the midst of a military operation that is targeting Kurdish areas in northeastern Syria, and there is a real concern that they could continue. There's been concerns raised about even ethnic cleansing and clearing out of villages and forced displacement. So the concerns are real, and this is all happening as President Trump is preparing to meet on Wednesday with President Erdogan at the White House, where these issues could come to the forefront.
What has Turkey said so far about this?
Turkey has broadly said that it doesn't tolerate these kind of actions, that it would launch its own investigation, and this is not how the forces should operate. But the U.S. officials that we spoke with were sort of skeptical of Turkey's real willingness to seriously investigate this. One Turkish official told us that no investigations have even yet been launched on their side to look into these things.
And again, President Trump will meet with Turkish President Erdogan at the White House on Wednesday. And I guess the question, as you mentioned here, is whether this subject will be pressed.
Yeah, and there's a lot of concern that there won't be. I know, you know, many U.S. officials are going to make sure that it's in the president's talking points, but President Trump and President Erdogan have this rather unique relationship for leaders. They're both quite strong leaders. They've had decisive conversations where the two of them have made dramatic decisions over the last few years. There are larger issues at play. The U.S. is concerned about what will happen to American who joined Islamic State that are in prisons in northeastern Syria. They want to make sure that Turkey doesn't send them back. There's concerns about Turkey buying a Russian missile defense system and concerns about Turkey's continued role as a partner in America's advanced F-35 jet fighter program. So there's a lot of issues at play, and it's not entirely clear that the president is going to raise any concerns about potential war crimes.
Wall Street Journal Middle East reporter Dion Nissenbaum joining us from Beirut. Thanks a lot, Dion.
Thank you.
The American Mormon community of Lamora, Mexico has been devastated by last week's massacre by a suspected cartel gunman on a road in the state of Sonora. Three women were killed along with six children in the attack. The Wall Street Journal says the killings threaten the future of this breakaway Mormon community of 200 people, founded more than 70 years ago. The Wall Street Journal's Jose de Cordoba talked to family members and joins us from Mexico City. Jose, you traveled to Lamora and also talked to members of this Mormon community. Please talk about how this attack has affected them and the community as a whole.
This attack has been devastating for the community. It's broken its heart. It's a very close-knit community. Most members of it are intermarried. It's been there for about 70 years, since the 1940s or so. A lot of the people are very worried about their safety and the future of their kids, so many have left. Many left on Saturday in a caravan and ended up in Arizona. It's not really known how many will come back and whether they will leave for just a few months to try to heal and return, or if they're gone forever. It's very hard to say. They leave a lot of pecan farms, pomegranate farms, and other businesses behind. So it's very, very tough. It's been home for them for many, many years. And for them, it's always been this bucolic, paradisical place.
Included in this group, one person is the mayor of the local town.
Adam Langford has been twice the mayor of the town that Lamora is part of. Lamora is just a little hamlet, which makes part of a municipality called Bavispe. He was twice a mayor of Bavispe.
What is Lamora like in general? Describe it to us. You said it was this idyllic community.
Lamora is made up of about 20 to 30 families. Most of them live in very comfortable 1950s style American ranch houses with wide lawns and big shady trees. They have amazing views of the valley and the nearby mountains. All the people that I talked to who grew up there said it was an idyllic childhood, that they would just roam, you know, the nearby mountains without a care in the world, you know, go into the river fishing. They love the place. But by the time most of them are young men, most of them leave for the United States, where they work in oil fields in North Dakota or in construction work. And then they come back later. Some of the members of the community belong to polygamous families. There are swarms of kids all over the place. They're very big families. So you see lots and lots of little kids.
This attack has also pierced the illusion that the family's American citizenship protected them from the violence. And there is obviously big disagreement between the families and the government about why they were targeted. You know, they believe that they were actually targeted by the gunman, and that it wasn't a case of mistaken identity. Isn't that right?
Yes. There's a lot of confusion about the motives of the attack and whether it was targeted or whether the victims were attacked in a case of mistaken identity. The area has been contested by two different cartels. There are the local guys who are from Sonora called the Los Salazar, and there's the armed wing of the Juarez cartel called La Línea. They've been fighting over drug routes and territory, and now they're fighting about smuggled gasoline in the area. Some think that one or the other cartel shot at these three vans that were carrying the women and children because the vans looked like vehicles usually used by cartels. But others believe that they were targeted, that the people who were doing the shooting knew exactly who the victims were. So that's what many in the families believe. Many of the survivors believe that. It's not known. Supposedly, they have arrested a person or some person connected with the attacks, but the authorities in Mexico have not given out any details about the arrest yet. The FBI is also apparently on the scene conducting investigations.
And this attack is also notable because it occurred against American citizens. I mean, Americans have been targeted before, but not to this level of brutality. You know, a vast majority of cartel victims are obviously Mexican. And this really threatens to harm relations between the U.S. and Mexico, doesn't it?
Well, because of the barbarity of the attack, 3 women and 6 children killed, one of the bands burnt, it's really focused a spotlight on the issue of violence in Mexico and has attracted a lot of U.S. attention. President Trump has tweeted out saying that the U.S. was ready to help Mexico deal with the cartels. It's attracted a lot of attention, and I think it will continue to attract a lot of attention. It's the last incident in a string of recent very violent incidents that have people scared about whether the present government has a handle on the violence. And it is different because Americans have not been targeted on such a large scale. There have been a couple of cases of Americans in Mexico, U.S. officials, ICE agents who were ambushed once, an embassy employee who was also killed in Ciudad Juarez some years ago. But it's never been on such a massive scale, and it's never been really aimed at, obviously, a group of women and children.
Wall Street Journal reporter Jose de Cordoba joining us from Mexico City. Thanks a lot, Jose.
Okay, thank you.
And finally, the Walt Disney Company launched Disney Plus, its highly anticipated streaming debut. And it immediately ran into some technical glitches. When users tried to log on and watch shows like the Star Wars spinoff, The Mandalorian, pages took up to 40 minutes to load, and they still weren't able to watch the show. Others reported issues logging into the service. A spokesman for Disney said the issues were the result of consumer demand for the platform that outpaced their already high expectations. You could say it's one of the first injuries in the streaming wars. And that's What's News for Tuesday, November 12th. I'm Charlie Turner for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.